more Idaho matters right now. Boise State University President Dr. Marlene Tromp has had a challenging first year in her position, from managing state budget cuts pre-COVID to leading the university through the academic and public health challenges of 2020. Well, we wanted to hear more about how she's navigating all of this. Our interview was recorded last Thursday, just hours before the Mountain West Conference decided to bring back Boise State football for a limited season this fall. Here's our recorded interview with Dr. Tromp. So the last time we talked with you, which I can't believe this, was last August, not last month, last August, about a month after you started in your role as president at the university. I think it's safe to say that the world has changed a lot since then.
Absolutely.
So how would you describe your first year at Boise State?
Well, I have to tell you, it's been one of the most amazing years of my life. You know, I got to come in. I'm so grateful. I know people who started their presidencies this July, which meant they began after the pandemic and they weren't allowed to connect face-to-face with their teams. You know, I feel so fortunate that I had a chance to be at those football games and on the basketball court and in the classrooms and on the quad and in the lecture halls and in the studios and the labs with people before we went remote, because it gave me a chance to see all those amazing things happening and all those gears and wheels turning at Boise State without the complications of the pandemic and all the subsequent challenges that came in its wake.
And one of them being, right, having to make the decision if you go fully online, if you come back, what that looks like. And the university made the decision to come back to campus this fall. Now, we know that the university tracks cases of COVID online, and this is the tracker is public information for people who want to look. How do you feel about the university's preparedness when it came to welcoming students back to campus? I mean, we're talking about college students. That some of these students were, there's no way they wouldn't likely be infected at some point. Not all, but some.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, one of the big factors for me was we were reading all this data about the physical health impacts of COVID, but there was increasingly data coming out. In fact, I'm writing an article on this right now. There was increasingly data coming out on the mental health impacts of COVID for folks 18 to 20, sometimes the measure is 18 to 26, sometimes it was 18 to 29. And what that data showed over and over and over again was that a disproportionate impact of COVID in terms of mental health was falling on people in those age groups, dramatically disproportionate. We were seeing 400% increases in rates of depression, anxiety, even psychosis, and things like suicidality. So one of the studies took a measure of people all over the entire country, thousands of people, and found that people in the 18 to 25 age group were 2.5 times as likely to be suicidal as anyone in any other age group, period. And that has everything to do with the fact that people in this age group are people who are launching their lives. I had the privilege and good fortune of being able to take my job, and I'm going to be teaching a class, I'm leading my leadership team. I'm making decisions with my key leaders across the university and connecting with our university community, because I can do that in spite of the fact that things were disrupted.
Yeah.
For someone who's young and is still building their network, they've been cut off from the very things that would help them build their future. And so what seemed and felt urgent to me was, if we can do this safely, if we can protect not just our students, but our faculty and staff and our whole community, because we're situated in a thriving metro area. So if we feel confident that we can do this, protect them, protect our campus community, and protect the community we sit in, then it is so important to do this, because our young people in that age group are our future. And we can't just put the brakes on their future. We have to help them move ahead. So we made a decision to be incredibly flexible. We let faculty choose and we let students choose. How do you want to come to campus? Do you want to be face-to-face? Do you want to be remote? Do you want to be hybrid? What is right for you? So we let our faculty choose, we let our students choose. And then we built the schedules around those needs. And we even responded, like when we had a higher demand, for example, for remote sections of certain courses, we built new remote sections for those courses. Mm-hmm. And then we discovered that we could be a part of the solution, not just for Boise State, but for all of Southwest Idaho, if we build out our testing capacity using our labs. So we brought together a team to work with our healthcare systems across the state and our Central District Health and the VA hospital. And sure enough, we should be ready to launch that new testing capacity mm-hmm. soon. And so we're not just responding to the immediate needs of our students on campus. We'll be doing what universities should do, which is we're going to serve the entire state.
You know, when you came into this position, you know, not only was the university thriving, the economy was thriving, and then the pandemic hits and there is an economic downturn, and this hit universities across the country hard. So, yes. So this is not unique to Boise State, but you had to make some tough choices. And one being implementing university-wide furloughs in the late spring to shore up funding. And just earlier this month, I mean, you had to make a difficult announcement, and that was that layoffs could be coming. How many people do you have an idea who may lose their jobs?
No, because what we did, and I think this was really critical, I asked our leaders to work with their leadership teams and work with their units and advise me. So instead of me making blind decisions from the top, I asked people to tell me what will work best in your unit, but not just that. I also asked them in March, I asked our senior leaders to engage in a project that I called future facing exercises. So I called upon them to tell me where would an investment in your area make the biggest impact for the future. And so they were already thinking, how would we invest too? And so it's not just about cutting, it's about figuring out how do we become better? How do we take this moment that's been very difficult and learn how to be a healthier and better university on the other side? How do we make the kinds of evolution, make the kind of evolution that's appropriate for a university in this moment. And I'll give you an example. Our Career Services Center got national recognition for immediately pivoting to be available to students remotely when we went remote. The same thing happened with our healthcare, all of our health services, both mental and physical health. So in addition to teaching, all of our services went online as well. And what we discovered is that more people were accessing our services when they could access them remotely. So we now know there are going to be a certain number of students who want to be able to access those services remotely for convenience and who that's going to aid. And so we'll build our structures so that we have both those face-to-face components for students who need that, but also those remote components for students who need that. The metaphor that I used with people was electronic shopping services. So I might prefer to go to the grocery store and pick out my produce myself. Mm-hmm. I want to look at the avocado and I want to look at the grapefruit and the apples and choose them myself. But there are going to be times when I'm traveling and my mom calls me and says, oh, honey, I'm out of mandarins. Can you get me some mandarins? And now I'm going to have the tool of that electronic shopping service to get that for her and get it delivered to the house for her. And she'll never have to leave. And because she's 93 years old, that's a really high priority to me. Mm-hmm. So I think what we've discovered is a kind of flexibility and adaptability in the university that's going to make us more resilient to shocks and challenges in the future. And it will make us a better university. So in spite of the fact that there have been real challenges, and in spite of the fact that our senior leaders are going to have to really make tough decisions in their areas, they're going to be able to still make decisions that help drive us forward too. So we're looking to the future, we're looking to evolve to be better. And even if we have to make tough choices, I wanted to take more furlough days than anybody else took on campus. So I made a decision to do that. I think that was the right thing for me to do. And I think our leaders have similarly made those kinds of sacrifices. Mm-hmm. as they look at their units, they're asking, how do we do this in a way that is least impactful to the teams that we care about and that make us who we are, but really help us drive forward to the future and become the best university we can be?
So one of the things about looking towards the future, and when you came into the job, I mean, like we said, nobody could have seen the pandemic coming, you know, a year and a half ago. But before the pandemic hit, even before you took over, the university's budget, I mean, it relied pretty significantly on football revenue. And I think that it's fair to say that, you know, athletics are a blessing and a curse, right? I mean, they bring such recognition, yet at the same time, when universities start to rely on that big money that comes in, here we fall into this issue that we look at the athletic department, it is especially susceptible to cuts right now, but layoffs won't be contained just to athletics. So I'm curious if your administration is looking for ways to wean the university off of reliance on that sports money and TV contracts. Yet at the same time, I mean, can you even realistically do that?
Well, it's actually, I would describe it differently, Gemma, than you had. I would say that athletics is dependent upon athletics revenue. So the university at large isn't dependent on athletics revenue. Athletics is dependent on athletics revenue. And so it is a system that feeds itself. But athletics is more than just the TV revenue. And athletics is more than just national attention. You know, people saying, oh, that blue field. It's mm-hmm. more than that. It's something that binds our community together. So it's a way in which an art professor and a first-year engineering student and an executive MBA student and an education TA can all have something shared in common and can really join in the experience, whether that's football or soccer or some other athletic experience, going to a tennis match. Our community, and not just the Boise State community, but the whole state, has had such great pleasure in the way in which our athletic programs have shown that kind of scrappy creativity that the state of Idaho is known for, that innovative, scrappy creativity. And so it's this point of identification and point of pride and a sense of community centeredness. And that's really what it gives to the university that's so vital. And so the loss of not playing means suddenly our athletics program is going to have to think very critically about how it manages its budget, because we have a commitment to those student athletes and we are going to support those student athletes. So how do we manage going forward in spite of the revenue losses? But for me, the real heartbreak, in addition to our student athletes who are competitors and want to play and our community that wants to be at the games, is the loss of that wonderful experience of community and being in the stands and cheering on your team and feeling that sense of excitement about these incredibly creative young people who are doing amazing things out there on the field of competition. Mm-hmm. So I think it's less about the university being reliant on any athletic program, even football, which is a huge revenue generator, than it is about athletics as a system depending on actually being able to compete in order to generate the revenue they need to survive.
I want to talk a little bit about your relationship with the state legislature as well as the governor's office, because before COVID, the university had to make some cuts because of state decision-making. You were told you had to make these cuts. How confident are you that the state will fund Boise State adequately this year so you won't have to go down this path again of, you know, laying people off, furloughs, you know, all of those things that come when these huge cuts have had to be made?
Gemma, I'm not confident. And I'm not confident for a couple of reasons. One, I think people don't understand. Universities are incredibly complex organizations. And I think people don't understand all that a university does. They may not know that our faculty and staff work together to supply PPE for our local hospitals when they couldn't get personal protective equipment so that folks would be safe. They may not know that we were serving K-12 so that their students would have teachers who were better prepared in the fall. So it's not just the students that we teach. There's an incredible amount of care that universities give to the community and service that universities give to the community. And so we have a responsibility to do a better job of helping people understand not just our economic impact, which is huge. The universities in the state have a multi-billion dollar impact on the state economy every single year. So not funding those universities is like not funding something that's got your greatest return on investment in the state, your greatest ROI in the state. So that's part of it. We have to help folks understand what we're doing to serve the people of the state. And that's our responsibility. And I think that issue has been a tough one. I think universities actually for decades thought, oh, what we're doing is so self-evidently good. We don't need to tell anyone. But I think as especially there have been increasing cultural tensions around higher education, it's become increasingly important for us to share that information. So that's one piece of it. Yeah. Another piece is there's just a lot of misinformation out there. I'm astounded sometimes. I hear folks say things at maybe a town hall or I see things posted online that are just simply inaccurate. And so we have to do a lot of correction of some misinformation that's out there. And we're really working with our board and working in partnership with other institutions across the state, because we have to help our legislators feel confidence in us, because their funding of the university is really what the students' tuition dollars hinge upon. The increase in tuition costs to students in the state of Idaho is directly proportional to the decrease in the amount of state funding that universities have gotten as a proportion of the general fund. That's true nationally as well. So there's been about a 30% decline in state funding of public higher ed, and there's been about a 30% increase in the cost burden on students. So we care so much about those students, and that's our mission. So this message is an urgent one for us to deliver. Because if we can't deliver that message effectively, then the people it hurts most of all are our students.
I really appreciate you taking time today. I know it is so busy, so I appreciate you sitting down with us, and best of luck as we continue to move forward with this.
Thank you so much, Gemma.
And I want to thank all of you for joining us. Our producers are Frankie Barnhill and Samantha Wright. Our production assistant is Molly Wampler. And thank you to everyone for participating in our Growing Pains series over the last week. You can listen back to the entire series by going to our website, BoiseStatePublicRadio.org. Click on the Growing Pains box on the homepage. And tomorrow we will have our regular panel of medical experts on to talk about the latest in the state's fight against the coronavirus. So send us an email if you have a question for our experts, IdahoMatters@boisestate.edu. It is Tuesday. I hope you have a great rest of your day. Remember, you can hear today's program and previous interviews by subscribing to the Idaho Matters podcast or downloading our new Boise State Public Radio app. And then if you have a comment or a question, just hit the talk to us little icon. And guess what? You can actually talk to us. Leave us a voicemail. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Thank you.